Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling a really tough but incredibly important topic, anti-Semitism.
And our guide for this is Stephen Biller's book, Anti-Semitism, a very short introduction. It's compact, but packs a real punch.
It really does. And Biller's core idea, well, it challenges how many of us probably think about this hatred.
Absolutely. He argues it's not just some, you know, ancient prejudice that somehow stuck around. He sees modern anti-Semitism as something distinct, something constructed in a specific historical moment.
He uses the striking phrase, a pathology of modernity.
Yeah. It's powerful. What he means is that modern anti-Semitism emerged as a kind of political strategy, really. It was developed mostly in the 19th century as a way to assign blame.
Blame for what, exactly?
For all the huge destabilizing changes people were grappling with. Think industrialization, the rise of capitalism, new political ideas, secularization. It was a confusing, often frightening time.
And anti-Semitism offered a simple but wrong answer, a scapegoat.
Precisely. It became this political tool, almost like a societal coping mechanism, albeit a destructive one. And Biller argues that understanding how this mechanism, this cultural code, works is critical.
Critical for defending, you know, open and democratic societies today, because these patterns can repeat.
Exactly. It's an adaptable ideology.
Okay, so Biller's background must be pretty key to developing this specific take. Tell us a bit about him. What makes his perspective unique here?
Well, Stephen Biller is a respected historian. His specialty is modern European history, specifically Central Europe, the Habsburg Empire, that whole world. Got his PhD from Cambridge.
Ah, Central Europe and Vienna, right. Especially turn of the century Vienna.
Yes, Fin de Siècle of Vienna is central. We often think of it as this, you know, amazing hub of creativity, Freud, Klimt, Mahler.
A birthplace of modern culture.
It was. But Biller's work really digs into the other side. It was also a laboratory, maybe the key laboratory, where modern racialized anti-Semitism was developed and tested as a political force.
So he studied the exact time and place where Jewish success and assimilation were booming.
Mm-hmm. In finance, the arts, academia.
But also where intense ethnic nationalism was rising, and politicians like Karl Luger were figuring out how to use anti-Semitism to gain power.
Right. Luger's Vienna is a crucial case study. So Biller is perfectly positioned, really, to analyze that shift, the shift from older religious anti-Judaism to this new modern racial anti-Semitism. He saw how it happened on the ground.
Okay, that makes sense. He's tracing the mutation, in effect. So let's dive into the book's main argument. What's the biggest thing Biller wants us to grasp?
The absolute core message is don't lump it all together. We have to distinguish between pre-modern religious hostility, what he calls anti-Judaism, and modern, secular, political, and crucially, racial anti-Semitism. They aren't the same thing.
That feels like the absolute linchpin of his argument. Explain that difference a bit more.
Okay, so with pre-modern anti-Judaism, the fundamental objection was religious. It was about what Jews believed.
And the solution, from the Christian perspective, was conversion. If a Jew converted, they ceased to be the problem, theologically speaking.
Exactly. The issue was faith, which could, in theory, be changed. But modern anti-Semitism, that's completely different terrain. It emerged alongside and was fueled by 19th century racial theories, pseudoscience, really.
So it shifted from belief to biology.
Precisely. It focused on some imagined, immutable biological essence. Jewishness wasn't about faith anymore. It was supposedly in the blood, an unchangeable racial characteristic.
Which means conversion is irrelevant.
Totally irrelevant. If the problem is race, an inherent part of what you are, then you become defined as an existential threat to the nation, or the race, or the body politic. And that, well, that way of thinking is what ultimately makes genocide conceivable. It moves from exclusion to elimination.
Wow. Okay, so the book traces how we got there. Biller acknowledges the groundwork laid by older stereotypes, right? Mm. Things like the deicide charge, money-lending tropes.
Yes, he covers that. That history created a kind of cultural soil where stereotypes could grow. But then he pinpoints a key moment. 1879.
What happened in 1879?
That's when the word itself, anti-Semitism, was coined by a German agitator named Wilhelm Marr.
And that wasn't accidental.
Not at all. Marr deliberately chose anti-Semitism to make the hostility sound, well, modern, rational, even scientific.
Like, it wasn't just old-fashioned religious prejudice, but a reasoned opposition to this defined Semitic race.
Exactly. He was trying to rebrand hatred for a modern secularizing age. So the very name signals the shift from objecting to what Jews believed to objecting to what Jews supposedly were.
An inherent racial trait. That's chilling.
It is. But Beller also digs into how this modern ideology built on older foundations. He talks about the Christian legacy.
Like the deicide charge you mentioned.
Yes, the centuries-old accusation that Jews were collectively responsible for killing Christ. That created a powerful narrative of otherness and guilt, justifying discrimination for ages.
And economic roles, too, right? Like the association with money lending.
Mm-hmm. Because Christian doctrine often restricted lending at interest, Jews were pushed into those financial niches in many parts of Europe, which then fed into stereotypes of greed and exploitation.
Okay, so you have this background radiation of prejudice, but then Beller points out this huge paradox with the Enlightenment and Jewish emancipation.
Ah, yes, the paradox. It's counterintuitive. You'd think the Enlightenment, with its focus on reason and rights, would reduce prejudice.
Right. Emancipation granted Jews legal rights, citizenship, opportunities they never had before.
But Beller shows it actually intensified the problem in many ways. It created what became known as the Jewish question.
How so?
As Jews rapidly assimilated, moved into cities, and achieved remarkable success in finance, law, medicine, the arts, journalism, they became highly visible.
And maybe highly envied.
Definitely. To segments of society struggling with the upheavals of modernity, the lower middle class, artisans, even some elites, these newly successful Jews looked like they were benefiting unfairly from all the disruption. They seemed rootless, international, somehow manipulating the system.
The perfect scapegoat, again. Which leads us right into how this new anti-Semitism became such a potent political weapon. You mentioned Karl Luger.
Yes, and others. This new anti-Semitism was incredibly flexible. That was its dark genius, politically speaking.
Flexible how?
It could appeal to seemingly opposite groups. Jews were blamed simultaneously for the evils of big international capitalism. Think of the caricatures of the Rothschilds pulling global strings.
Right, the shadowy financier trope.
And they were blamed for revolutionary communism because Karl Marx and other key socialist figures had Jewish origins.
So damned if you're rich, damned if you're revolutionary.
Exactly. That's why the German socialist August Bebel famously called anti-Semitism the socialism of fools.
Explain that phrase.
It means it offers a simplistic, false answer to real economic anxieties. Instead of analyzing the complexities of capitalism or social inequality, you just blame the Jew. It diverts anger from the system onto an easily identifiable group, a shortcut for the intellectually lazy or the politically manipulative.
And this scapegoating was supercharged by conspiracy theories.
Absolutely. The most infamous example being the Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Ah, the forgery claiming to be secret plans for Jewish world domination.
Yes. Though proven a fake early on, it spread like wildfire and became, you know, a foundational text for anti-Semites everywhere. It cemented that image of the Jew as the secret, malevolent conspirator controlling world events.
It provides that seductive, simple explanation for everything bad that happens. No complexity, just a hidden hand. Terrifyingly effective.
And Beller connects all these threads, the racial theory, the political scapegoating, the conspiracy myths, directly to the Holocaust.
How does he make that final connection?
For the Nazis, who synthesized and radicalized all these elements, the Jew wasn't just an opponent or an undesirable. They adopted this extreme racial thinking, defining the Jew as a kind of racial bacillus, a disease threatening the purity of the Aryan body politic.
A bacillus, like a germ.
Exactly. And if you define a group as a deadly germ, then extermination doesn't seem like murder anymore. In their twisted logic, it becomes a kind of public health measure, a medical procedure.
Chillingly logical within its own insane framework. Not an aberration, Beller argues, but the endpoint of this modern ideology.
Yes, and that's why looking at someone like Mayor Luger in Vienna is so important. He showed it was possible to use anti-Semitism not just as fringe rhetoric, but as a tool to win mass democratic elections and govern.
And Hitler was living in Vienna at the time, watching and learning.
He absolutely was. He saw the blueprint and took it to its most extreme conclusion.
So what happens after the Holocaust? Does this ideology just vanish?
Not according to Beller. Obviously, overt Nazi-style racial hatred became largely taboo in the West. But the underlying cultural code, the mechanism of scapegoating, it mutated.
Mutated how?
Well, in the Soviet bloc, for example, it sometimes disguised itself as anti-cosmopolitanism, attacking supposedly rootless, disloyal intellectuals, many of whom happen to be Jewish.
A coded way of saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And in other contexts, particularly in parts of the Arab world and certain political discourse, it fused with anti-Israel sentiment, sometimes employing those classic anti-Semitic tropes we discussed: global control, conspiracy, inherent malevolence, but redirecting them towards the state of Israel or Zionism.
So the code adapts, finds new targets, new language.
That adaptability, that's the key lesson.
Okay, let's try to pull these threads together. Thinking about Beller's analysis, what are the core takeaways for us, you know, trying to make sense of the world today? Let's maybe focus on three main themes. First, that core idea, anti-Semitism as a pathology of modernity.
Yeah, that's number one. The big reflection here for you, the listener, is whenever you see a political narrative that blames a specific, often small group for huge, complex problems, economic crashes, social change, pandemics, whatever, be critical. Ask yourself, is this using that scapegoating cultural code Beller identifies? It's often a way to avoid facing systemic issues.
Okay, good point. Second big theme, that critical shift Beller stresses from judging people on belief to judging them based on race or inherent identity.
Right. And the takeaway there is broader than just anti-Semitism. It shows how any prejudice becomes far more dangerous when it stops focusing on changeable actions or beliefs and starts defining people by immutable characteristics, race, ethnicity, origin. That's the ideological move that opens the door to extreme exclusion and dehumanization. Watch out for arguments based on what someone supposedly is rather than what they do or think.
Got it. And third, the power of conspiracy theory exemplified by the protocols.
Mm-hmm. The lesson from Beller's analysis of the protocols is really about pattern recognition. Recognize the hallmarks of that paranoid style. The claim of a secret cabal, a hidden plot controlling everything, a simple explanation for all the world's complex problems. When you see that structure in any narrative today, whether it targets financiers, politicians, immigrants, whoever, apply Beller's skepticism, it helps you resist misinformation.
Those are really practical ways to think about it. Beller's book, though short, has some really memorable ways of phrasing things. What are some key concepts or quotes that really stand out?
Okay, first, just reinforcing that idea of anti-Semitism as a cultural code. It's not just random hatred. It's a learned framework, a way of interpreting and reacting to crises, especially the crises tied to modernity.
Yeah, like a preset filter for understanding the world, almost. What else?
Then there's the sentence that perfectly captures the crucial dividing line. The objection was to what Jews believed, to a world where the main objection was to what Jews were, a race. That crystallizes the shift from religious anti-Judaism to racial anti-Semitism, the shift that made genocide possible.
That's so starkly put.
It is. And third, that phrase, the socialism of fools. It just perfectly nails how anti-Semitism functions politically, offering an easy, personalized target for deep-seated economic or social anger, distracting from the actual systemic issues.
A really potent summary. Any others?
One more, maybe. The paradox, he highlights, the emancipation of the Jews, instead created the modern Jewish question. It underlines that strange, tragic dynamic where progress and increased freedom counterintuitively fueled a new and more virulent form of hatred by increasing visibility and competition.
It shows that progress isn't always linear, and new freedoms can create new tensions that need managing.
Exactly. It's a warning that pluralism needs constant defense.
So let's make this really practical. How can we use Beller's framework, his analytical tools, in our daily lives, navigating the news, online discussions?
Okay, tool number one, decoding political rhetoric. Beller equips you to listen critically. When you hear politicians or commentators blaming globalist elites or shadowy financiers, or maybe specific figures like George Soros for complex national or global problems, pause.
Ask yourself if that's echoing the old code.
Exactly. Recognize those phrases often function as modern, secularized stand-ins for older anti-Semitic scapegoating narratives. The explicit mention of Jew might be gone, but the underlying structure of blame, the conspiracy coded language.
You're right, coded language. Okay, what's tool number two?
Tool two helps you navigate charged debates, especially around Israel and Palestine. Beller's historical analysis helps you step back a bit. It encourages you to ask analytical questions rather than just reacting emotionally. When you encounter a criticism of Israel, ask, does this criticism use classic anti-Semitic tropes? Does it talk about secret control, disproportionate power, inherent evil, dual loyalty? Is Israel being held to a completely unique standard, singled out in a way no other country is?
So distinguishing legitimate policy critique from rhetoric that slips into those old, dangerous patterns.
Yes. It helps you analyze the form of the argument, not just the surface content. If those old tropes are there, Beller's cultural code is likely active, regardless of the speaker's intent, perhaps. It gives you critical distance.
That's really useful. Okay, final thoughts. For me, what was most surprising or maybe disturbing reading Beller was realizing how forces we usually see as positive modernity, science, the nation state, emancipation, were twisted or co-opted to create these new tools for exclusion. It wasn't just some ancient evil resurfacing. It was something modern, constructed using modern tools and ideas that feels important.
I agree. And for me, the most valuable, maybe the most sobering lesson from Beller is just that. The most lethal forms of group hatred aren't necessarily primal instincts bubbling up from the depths of history. They're often modern inventions.
Carefully constructed ideologies.
Yes, carefully constructed, often pseudoscientific ideologies built to serve specific political goals, especially in times of anxiety and rapid change. Understanding how that mechanism of exclusion is built, how it operates, that really is our best intellectual defense against it. In all its forms.
A powerful thought to end on, understanding the architecture of hatred to dismantle it.
Precisely.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.